Can you all hear me okay? Because I'm not got the mic here to be able to get a small enough room. All good in the back? Good. All right. Get things started. If you do not grab the listener in 7 seconds, the chances that your song will be successful decreases exponentially. Now, I'm just going to stand here, and in the moments ahead, I'm going to show you how I actually arrived at this 7-second rule, and I'll tell you other things that are key for you in song creation for today and for the future. But through my years of observing how music is created and consumed in the 21st century from my time at Yahoo Music, MTV Networks, and several other places, I can say this with absolute certainty. If you do not grab the listener in 7 seconds, the chances that your song will be successful decreases exponentially. Now, for fear of being too subtle, of course, I'm doing the same thing right now as I speak to you. I'm up front with an important fact that I want to make sure that you remember. And through that, I've hopefully engaged you enough in that you get into my presentation today. And with that, talk about this presentation with other people, and then hopefully end up buying my book, Future Hit DNA. But this is not just a mere ploy just to engage you in my talk. This is truly a reality about songs today and how they actually reach the modern music consumer. The days where you could rely on casual flipping on the radio and stumble upon songs that eventually become familiar to you, that's done. The days of limited access, forcing you to hear only what's pushed to you, is clearly way over. What you need to do now to not only get your song heard, but also cement that song into the listener to become familiar and driving modern commerce, well, the most important thing you can remember is that you cannot construct the song the way you did 10, 20 years ago. Let's look at some of the facts that are out there right now. There are so many songs released on a weekly basis that if you actually attempted to listen to every song in its entirety for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you could only actually listen to approximately 5% of all music that is released. Let me stress this again so that you truly understand the competition that each and every one of you now has. A person who did nothing else in their life but listen to every song that came out can only possibly hear 5%. And this is before you get to distractions such as work, video games, viral videos, and then the next week there's just another round of songs of which you can only listen to 5% of. And then another five, another round. The other 95% each week just continually falls by the wayside. And that's presuming, of course, you only listen to a song once. Now, of course, nobody actually does that much listening. For one thing, they tend to ignore most of the music in genres that just don't appeal to you. They also ignore most of the other works by artists whose songs aren't that good, or maybe only have one hit song, High Death of Album. But think about this from the listener's perspective. Life is too short. If you just heard 2 songs, singles or otherwise, from an act, and those songs weren't appealing when there's so much more music out there to listen to, why stop listening to the other tracks on an album? I just don't have time. So why do people still insist, actually, on releasing 10 songs at a time at the exact same moment in time? At least if you spread out those songs over some months, it might feel more digestible to a music fan. They might think, maybe the artist has improved, and maybe I'll give that artist another chance. But most people don't have enough time. We have to take this into account. They just don't have time. And the music dialogue, especially amongst the current passionate music fan, is now ramped up to the nth degree. The fan is expected to know everything about every new song and artist that hits their social circle. So a large number of people listen to only a portion of a song, enough to gain an opinion. That provides them enough time, enough information, so that they can discuss that song online, discuss that song with people in person. So they listen to a song once, and sometimes not the whole song. Who's got the time? I've got to hear all the other songs that are being released that my social circle is discussing, while I still keep up with the latest TV shows, the latest movies, the latest video games, the latest online videos, and everything else that's going on. No mistake. This new consumption pattern is partially behind the decreased revenue all music has received in the last few years. Because certain things about music have remained the same. Chief amongst them is that it still takes 5 to 7 listens before a song becomes familiar enough to make it a permanent one for somebody to engage in. That has not changed. 5 to 7 listens before somebody can start singing it, enjoying it, recognizing it in an unfamiliar setting. 1 listen, or a partial listen, is actually now easier than ever. But with all these other distractions, the hardest part is the second listen. Remember that. Getting somebody to try a song is a bit easier now, but getting them to the second listen, the second taste, that's the hardest part. But it's the part that you all need the most if you want to have your music be a financially successful career. The digital revolution, I would say, has actually made music discovery harder. Think about this. Digital age was supposed to make the whole process easier. People were supposed to find the songs they want more quickly than ever. The elimination of radio, the record company filters, were supposed to make this world a fairer place. What happened? Which brings me back to the 7-second rule. Now, this is not some rule that I just came up with on my own. This just came from my simple observation. Now, let's start with how people used to discover music. They used to discover music on the radio, flipping channels. Maybe they flipped on MTV and they caught a video midstream, very possibly at the chorus or close to the chorus. And all of a sudden, by hearing a song cutting into the chorus for a first time, they listen, their ears perk up, and they say, what is this? This is intriguing, and then of course, you listen. The fact that the listening options were also just a couple also helped this. The listener was more apt to give that song a chance when they knew that there was only a few other radio channels worth hearing. And perhaps that song that they caught in the middle was the best of all of those limited options. But now? Well, now the options feel infinite. And they certainly number so greatly that there is certainly always another choice. Just as an example, I listened to satellite radio a while back. And just going through just the music stations on satellite radio, I decided to basically give each song 10 seconds to impress me wherever it was, and then go on to the next station. It took me nearly 10 minutes to go through all of the music stations, which meant that by the time I got back to the first station I started with, they were obviously on a completely different song. Compare this to the 6 or so stations that you used to have when you just dealt with traditional radio. That person listening to traditional radio had to settle on something, and settle on something quickly, even if that option was a mediocre one. And now, I haven't added in all these others. I just talked about satellite radio. I haven't talked about music on demand service. I haven't talked about Spotify. I haven't talked about illegal downloading. You put all these options together. It's no wonder people are giving no time to any of this music for music discovery. But when you go through the majority of music discovery options, they actually all share a very similar trait. Now, what are some of these options? Well, you can, judging by most of the people who've emailed me about coming to see their bands here, a lot of people push me to MySpace. You can listen to songs on MySpace on demand. There's an option. Maybe you get a song on Pandora's radio service. It pops up as a personalized recommendation. Maybe you stream it on a music blog. Maybe you watch it on YouTube. Maybe you listen to the song that you downloaded legally. Maybe you downloaded it illegally. Maybe you are now watching the music video on your cell phone, or maybe even watching it on your iPad. Now, having a song come up on your iPod, that you forgot that you even put it on your iPod. These comprise the overwhelming majority of initial music discovery listens by the modern consumer. And unlike the music discovery of the past, they all have a common thread. A very consistent common thread. And that thread is that nearly every single play starts at 0 seconds. Remember this. Every single music discovery play starts at the beginning of the song. This may seem obvious, but this, to the music consumer, is new. Now let me throw another wrench in the works. When you used to hear a song starting from a beginning on radio, you had a DJ. And the DJ was there to help you out. Now, their job was twofold. 1, they often hyped the song that you were about to hear. They also talked over the introduction, which had an effect on leading you into the song, getting you to the vocal part. Now, all the ways that people are hearing music nowadays, all the places we just talked about, no DJ. Nothing. So how is anybody getting led into the song? And again, the DJ controlled things, and now the person at the other end controls things. So now you also said, of course, we've got all these other distractions, and they're distractions while you're listening to the song. You listen to the song on MySpace? Well, most people are getting there because of friends. But they came to that page usually for the friend, not the music. So they may actually get some bits of their friend's life. Maybe they're on Facebook and somebody chats with them and says, oh, you know, I've got this. And then they move on from the song. The song better engage you because the friend is likely to distract you more than the song. Maybe you're watching a video on YouTube and all of a sudden you glance to the side and you say, wow, look at these recommendations. There's something I like a whole lot better. So even if your primary purpose was to hear the song because someone discussed the music with you and you heard that the song was good, and you clicked on the forwarded link, or you explicitly went to search out that artist's song, even then, the infinite world of the internet is always calm. And that person on the other end doesn't have time for something that won't be permanently embraced in their lives. Hence why they give it 10 seconds. So what is the result of all this? Through the data that I've seen, through several internet sites, and through all the stuff that I've seen regarding the modern music consumer and how they're spending time online. And for those of you that have YouTube accounts, you can sign up and actually see how people are watching your videos on YouTube, and you will see this. About half the people who go to a particular song, no matter how they got there, explicitly, implicitly, by accident, doesn't matter. About half the people only hear 10 seconds of the song. And most importantly, the first 10 seconds of a song. First impressions really are just that. They are not arrived at from giving a song a chance or hearing a hook. If you want to gain a new fan, the one that has traditionally been the difference between making a little and a lot of money, you have to snag them and embrace them when you can. And traditional song structure will just not do that. So that standard 16-second introduction that people used to throw around because that was tailor-made for radio does not work. The old adage, don't bore us, get to the chorus, probably no more truer today than ever before. And if you remain skeptical, let me show you this. Now granted, this is the US, but this is worth noting. This is the average length of introductions in number one pop songs from 1955 to the present. And if you notice, these are blocked out every 5 years, and it's a little hard to read because of the light. But as technology changed, the length of introductions moved up to a peak in the late 80s of about an average length of 18 seconds per intro. But when you get to 2000, look, it plummets. And it doesn't just plummet to anywhere in particular, it plummets right here between 6 and 8 seconds. The average length of the introduction of number one songs in the US the past 10 years has been 7 seconds. And what started getting scary for me, that I was beginning to actually predict what would happen with the song when I listened to the first 15 seconds and was often right. Now, lest you think that this is some fluke, let me just clue you in. As I kind of showed you from the chart, technology has always dictated hit songs throughout modern music, and to some degree, music previous to that as well. But let's just focus on the average length of intros as an example. In the 50s, intros were short for several reasons. One is songs were almost all 3 minutes long. And the reason for that was because the 45 was created with a length that essentially tapped out at around the 3 minute marks. Then the radio stations that played music, they often, due to technology, had only one turntable. The DJ couldn't cue up music neatly and separately as they do now with two turntables. And when they got two turntables, coincidentally, the average length of introduction started to begin to rise because the DJ could have more control. What else was happening at this time? You had the rise of the LP, which meant that there was more technological space to have longer songs, and it was also a pain to switch songs because, if you remember, there was that cumbersome process of having to lift the needle, and then you got to find the next song you wanted, and then you often missed a bit, and you got into the middle of the song. All these things. And that meant that the audience was captive to whatever sounds and moods that the person wanted to give, which meant that you could have longer introductions because you got to set the mood of the song. People wanted to stick around and listen to an entire album. It was just too much of a pain. And that's just, to us, lifting a needle doesn't seem like that much of a pain. The average consumer, it was. Then you throw in cassettes. And when cassettes came about, the length of introductions to the most popular songs peaked. That whole process of switching songs became more complicated. Anybody remember when you got a cassette 25 years ago and you needed to skip to another song and you had to fast forward and then you missed it and so you had to go rewind it and get back to the beginning and fast forward again and rewind? Remember that? It's a pain. Most people hated doing it. So then what do? They hit play, listen to the whole thing. As a musician, you could have a long intro because your audience was captive. Now, the 90s brought about widespread use of a computer program at radio stations called Selector. Now, for those of you that don't know, Selector is the program that literally turns the exact job of scheduling what songs come after another over to a computer. And it took into account many, many data points to determine how they should order a song on a radio station. Took into account whether the song was sung by a male or female, took into account tempo, style of the song, relative popularity of the song, and yes, the introduction of the song was factored in there as well. That introduction might seem like a minor point, but consider this. This also rose specifically in the U.S. with the consolidation of radio industry. But I do know that throughout the world, a lot of the length of introductions can actually be traced to the necessity of disc jockey banter to add advertising messages. Now, no longer was it just about talking about the song. The disc jockey needed to sell more ad time, and they needed to talk about products and companies. And many listeners have correctly picked up that there's been a dramatic increase in the last 20 years on commercials and radio, commonly referred to as spot load. Now this, the DJ, obviously effective, needed these longer introductions to songs so that they could get their advertising message across, so that led to these longer intro songs playing more often. Now, to be fair, radio broadcasters don't program a song just because it would sell more advertising, specifically. But the computer program did the dirty work for them. Follow this so you can see how this worked in action. Let's just find a radio program. There he is. He looks really charming, doesn't he? That's definitely a U.S. radio program. I'm not talking about European ones. The radio programmer picks all the songs they want to play in a given week. He then decides the approximate range of plays or spins that song would receive in a given week, say between 15 and 20 times a week. Now, if within that group of songs, let's say song A had a long intro, and had a required length of intro for them to put particular advertising messages in. Now that song would have a higher likelihood of being chosen by Selector, which meant that would probably get played 20 times. Meanwhile, song B has a shorter intro of 14 seconds, and would probably only play 15 times. Now, these five additional plays may not seem like a lot, but the computer just increased the number of plays by 33%. Now imagine if this scenario was replicated in multiple radio stations, in multiple places across multiple countries. Think about exponentially how many additional spins these songs would get at radio just by having a longer introduction. All of a sudden, these songs could get played, and in the US, you combine all the US stations, a couple hundred more times a week. Well, what does that mean? Well, if you say, let's say 150 times a week, that could mean the difference on a chart between number 32 and number 30. And that could mean the difference between number 21 and number 19. Minor differences to consumers who only care about the top 10, but you know, if song B was stuck at number 21 because it couldn't get those additional 100 plays, all of a sudden the industry starts saying, ah, that's a stiff. That song's not going to be successful. Meanwhile, song A goes up to number 19, and all of a sudden, hey, that's a top 20 record. Ooh, this song's got momentum. We got to keep moving this up the chart. Doesn't matter that the momentum was gathered by scheduling software. The world doesn't know that. The world doesn't even care about that. It was done with this momentum, then, if it goes into the top 20, then it goes on to, you know, to radio shows focusing on the top 20 chart. Which means that it gets more plays, which means the cycle occurs over and over again. If you find that this is still skeptical, I'm going to now give you a really, really interesting example. Mariah Carey. Now, here's something interesting. Now, in 2005, Mariah Carey's success actually tied her with Elvis Presley for the most Billboard number one records ever by a solo artist. Now, something had to be going in her favor. Obviously, she's got talent. Obviously, she works with the best producers, the best songwriters. We all know that. But it turns out, while his power was crucial to give her music prominence, the most important element may have been her abnormally long intros at the most important period of time when all of this was happening. Because she actually also holds the dubious distinction of having the longest average introduction length of number one songs in the U.S. While many song introductions in the 90s hovered in the 16 to 18 second range, Mariah routinely had song introductions that extended beyond 20 seconds. In fact, Dream Lover and Fantasy had intros that neared 40 seconds, while Always Be My Baby tied for the second longest introduction of any number one song in the pop era. So she had a lot going for her. Now, this does not mean that Mariah and her team created the songs with this manipulation in mind. Most likely, and through the people that I've talked that have worked with her, they did not create this with this in mind. But there is very little doubt in my mind that having these longer introductions definitively helped her to be able to make sure that she cemented these number one songs. But that was a subtle advantage that technology gave Mariah in the past. We're now talking about the present, and we're talking about the future. I just want you to understand how the intros have always had an impact in what songs became hits. Now, obviously, the radio listens are diminishing before our eyes and being replaced by digital consumption. And the familiarity, the usage, the cash, that's largely going to be coming from this digital consumption. But what are, if you will, the personal selectors that consumers are now using to determine what they listen to, and what they listen to determining what they buy, and what they talk about to get other people to buy, to listen to, and what they consume via streaming, which leads to increasing levels of royalty revenue. Let's start with those seemingly innocuous MySpace plays and YouTube streams. And we can also throw in Spotify into this mix as well, for sure. Currently, when a decent song gets a million plays, it seems to be a good indicator of sales, but it doesn't generate a lot. But what happens as all of these services start going to tens of millions of streams and hundreds of millions of streams? This is where we are rapidly headed. And those streams are now monetized better. And there are several services racking up tens of millions of streams. What if, and it's going to be very realistic, in 2 to 4 years from now, when you'll have 10 million streams a month coming from YouTube, and 10 million coming from Spotify, and 10 million coming from MySpace, and 10 million coming from services that we haven't even thought of yet. And you add all those together, now all of a sudden we're talking about some significant royalties. And then, of course, they still do lead to single sales and ringtone sales and other, you know, all other future forms of music sales we haven't thought of, but it's going to be about taking these little bits of money all over the place and adding up to a lot. So, but these services, by the way, don't want to pay for people only hearing 10 seconds of a song. And they also can see which songs are being played for much shorter periods. So when it comes to the songs that these services are going to want to promote, I don't know about you, but I would be promoting the ones that you know that users like most, which also means the ones that are going to be most cost efficient for these companies. And that's not just the front page of YouTube. That's also the song that's pushed on Pandora or any radio service, the song placed in a playlist on any number of sites. So if you want to create the songs that are most likely going to be promoted, that listeners are most likely going to respond to, that does not result in hitting a skip button on a radio player, or a MySpace playlist, or a Spotify playlist, you've got to engage the listener, and you've got to do it fast. Now, I could really show you all the research that shows you, but you're just thinking about this logically. You're all seeing how this is going to make sense. And just think about it as you watch your next your nearest teenager, or your nearest college friend, you know, or some of you in the room, just think about it as you're consuming music, and you might actually go and tell me, you know what, this 7 seconds rule is probably a little bit too generous. But that's what the data shows. Now, the good news that I'm here to tell you is that once you get past those initial 7 seconds, right after you've hooked them, as you've no doubt thinking, now you may think, all right, maybe I'll move the chorus up to the beginning, and you think about some of the recent hits that have been going right to vocals, because whether it's a verse or chorus, the reality is that once a listener hears someone sing, something triggers inside of them. That's maybe out of guilt or just society's norms that people don't want to interrupt them. But you get them hooked with solid vocals of any sort. And it keeps them engaged with a vocal flow that does not have any sort of conclusion. It gets them deeper into the song. The good news is that the deeper the listener gets into a song, the more they exponentially increases the chances that they will listen to the entire song. And the more they hear of the song, the more likely they're going to be familiar with the song, which will entice that second listen, the important second listen. Once you get to that second listen, the more that you exponentially increase that likelihood that the song becomes cemented. And you get to the multiple listens. Now, whether that commerce is a direct purchase or whether that commerce is going to be multiple plays on Spotify doesn't matter. It's getting the multiple listens. Because as you begin to get paid more from streaming experience, it doesn't take a genius to note that someone getting to stream a song 20 or 30 times is going to get paid much better than somebody streaming it once. Let's show this actually in action with downloads. This is just an example of the top 10 selling downloads from earlier this year in the US. Took everything one by one and took the length of introductions for each one of the songs. 70% of the songs had introductions of 7 seconds or less, and all 10 songs had an average intro length of 7 seconds. All of these hit songs, average intro length, 7 seconds. Now, some of you in the room may be a little bit skeptical still. Say, well, Jay, this is all great, but you're from the States, and maybe that's how they do it in the States, but that's not how we do it here. This is this week's top 10 selling downloads on iTunes in Denmark, right now. The average length of an introduction in your own top 10 is 8 seconds. And guess what? There's only 70% of the songs have intros of 8 seconds or less. Now, there's another advantage of getting someone to listen to your song in the whole song. It's blocking out your competition. The tens of thousands of other songs that are released every single week and the millions of other songs, remember that 5% I talk about? They already exist. The competition used to be existing solely in the domain of a radio playlist. The playlist had a limited number of slots, and you had to go and convince a radio programmer by whatever means necessary to give you one of the slots and not give it to the other guy. The same type of thing happens right now and every minute in the new digital economy, but it happens in a much different way, and payola is not going to help you in this new digital economy. The reality is that every listener has a finite amount of time that they are listening to music. Now, that finite amount of time might come from somebody getting from point A to point B. Could be a kid who started doing homework, and then he has to go down and eat dinner. Or maybe you're just somebody who's leaving to go out for the night. No matter how you slice it, a listening time is finite. And as more and more of what becomes familiar is dictated by how much they get into the song, and as more and more of what is listened to in the expanding universe comes from zeroing in on a song choice. And as more and more of what you listen to will be responsible for increasing portions of your revenue, the need for you to your song and your music to control the listening experience is apparent. Because if you have someone who only has 1 hour, and they are only going to listen to whole songs, your 4-minute song is one of 15 songs that they're going to hear in that hour. And when you figure that a lot of those songs are tunes that they're already familiar with, if yours is not one of the unfamiliar ones, you better make it impactful. And also make sure it's not one of the ones skipped after 10 seconds, because if it's skipped, the chances that they're going to come back with a more open mind are very, very slim. And if your song is mentally number 16 on the person's playlist, songs that they were planning on listening to, whether it was because of the playlist that they put together or because of another website that they were going to, that song number 16, out of luck. Never get to it. And you don't get the impression. And you don't get the revenues. And if your song fails to impact in the first 7 seconds, and then somebody and that listener skips ahead to the next song, that means that the guy sitting next to you right now, who is song number 16, you just gave them that opportunity. Again, blocking the competition. If you make sure that your song doesn't get skipped, the guy sitting next to you doesn't get heard. If your song is not impactful enough, doesn't matter if the chorus is great, it doesn't matter if it sets the right mood, but if it does not get impactful enough, you just let the guy sitting next to you win. This is a war. There's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of songs that are being released every single week. You've got to do what you can to make your song get heard. That brings me to another point. What if, in that finite hour, what if you took that 4-minute song, which, by the way, you likely made because in the back of your mind there's a little bird that said radio-like songs that are 4 minutes, and so you better keep it around 4 minutes because that's about right. But what if you took that 4-minute song and made it 4.5 minutes? Just enough little subtle tweaks, twists, and little things just to push it past 4 minutes without sounding too boring or overstaying its welcome. What if you did that? Remember, the finite experience of the listener stays the same. So again, thinking of the hypothetical hour-long experience we're discussing. If you increase your 4-minute song by 30 seconds, you've now increased the amount of time they're spending with your song by 8%. But more importantly, if you and everyone else decided to employ this trick, if everybody in this room decided to do that, and you had a playlist of everybody's songs in this room, and the average length of a song bumped up to 4.5 minutes, then in that hour, the listener could only hear 13 or 14 songs, meaning the total number of songs heard in an hour just got reduced. Bad for the other guy, good for you. You just figured out yet another trick to block out your competition and to hopefully make your song more familiar. But you know what else it's good for? Well, how about that streaming service? How about Spotify? More and more, I'm hearing discussions about something called ARF. Lousy sounding name, but it stands for Average Royalty Per Hour. You see, those new royalties that are now flowing in the direction of the song, that's the newest thing for a place like Spotify to have to manage as a cost. Nearly all of the agreements that are out there are costs on a per-song basis. If you're in the shoes of a Spotify or a YouTube on a MySpace, you are almost always paying per song. So everybody is now saying, because of that, if you're paying per play, then they're going to have to manage a cost based on how many plays. They want to reduce the number of plays that they actually give somebody. They don't want to reduce the number of time, amount of time you spend with Spotify. They want you to spend hours and hours with Spotify, but ultimately they want you to do it by playing less songs, because then they spend less. So let's actually look at this in terms of the cost being a variable cost for each of these things. If you're talking about MySpace or YouTube, you're talking about all these hundreds of millions of songs. YouTube's now doing, I think, 2 billion streams a day total. Now, granted, not all of it's music, but they're doing a lot. So now what are you going to do to reduce that? Now let's think about this. Think about it again. Here's another example from how the site looks at it. It costs Spotify, as an example, the same to play Stairway to Heaven as it does for them to play 3 unfamiliar 2-minute punk songs. There's my little... Or maybe 2 unfamiliar pop songs. So if they're managing costs, what are they likely to do? Go with the familiar song that's long? Try to push you to that song? They're going to try to steer you to that song? Because even in an on-demand world, even in a world, whether it's YouTube or Spotify, in a world that you think is about directing you to the songs that you want to hear, there's always little things that each one of those services do to drive you to the songs they want you to. And more they will do it in very subtle ways. And if they figure out that there's a chance that you might like Stairway to Heaven, they will probably steer you in that direction because it costs them less. So let's actually we're going to look at it just to give you an example from dollars. We're just going to take a random internet site that has radio service. And we're going to use, for the sake of math, we're going to use the U.S. royalty rates. So let's assume that an average internet radio station has 1,000 listeners in an hour. And let's assume that the station generally plays 15 songs an hour, again, that average 4-minute song. Station pays $21 in royalties in the U.S. per hour. And if the station, though, figures out and manages to play 12 songs an hour, they are now paying $16.80 in royalties. Now, the programmer of this station has now saved the company $4.20. Congratulations, go buy a pizza. But aggregated out over a period of a year, that translates to $37,000 in savings. And most of these are sites that have multiple radio stations. So let's assume that that site has 70 different radio stations. Moving from 15 to 12 songs an hour just saved that company $2.6 million. You don't think they're going to do this? Of course they are. So all of a sudden, that long song liability that was there at radio actually becomes something that is an asset online. And by the way, if that longer song is effective, it shows up in research on that site. And if it shows up there, then the site's more likely to push it more. And then if that strategy works well, then the time spent on that site increases. And if it increases, then that site looks better to advertiser, and that strong circle just keeps getting stronger. But even in the future, even if everybody decides, you know what, let's actually base it on the amount of time you spend versus a song, versus the songs you play, which I think actually will come in the next decade, well, then your longer song still has the advantage because it owns the listening experience, blocking out the competition. Again, so much songs are out there, you have to think about this. You have to think about owning somebody's time to block out the competition. Before I came here, I wrote a blog post about this yesterday. Many of you, probably in this room, sent me emails encouraging me to come out to see your bands play tonight and tomorrow. I got 54 bands asking for my attention. I said to myself, I'm going to go devote 2 hours to listening to the music that all of you guys sent me to determine what bands got out there. That meant that I had 2 minutes per band on average. And if one band failed to impress me in the first 7 seconds, I don't have time. And if another band, which a couple did, really impressed me, and I spent 3 or 4 minutes listening to that band, and you happen to be band number 50, 51, 52, 53, I apologize, I didn't get to you. This is not just me, this is not just the industry, this is the way consumers are now listening to music. Block your competition, get more impressive, own the listening experience, it's a win-win for you. You create familiarity, you create royalties. Now, I have a dozen more tricks, and I could probably spend about 3 hours talking to you about a lot of the stuff in the book. And I want to just allow some time for questions, because I'm no doubt imagining that some of you have them. But, you know, you have to understand the ADD culture, the limited attention span culture that so many of us live in right now, it can be something that works well if you know how to play into it. And the interesting thing that I really discovered is that technology has always played a role in hits. So even if you go and look at this and say that this, you know, you might still look at this as being a little skeptical, this is not anything new, it's just new because the technology is new. But it doesn't matter if it was player piano rolls 100 years ago, or radio 50 years ago, or turntables 20 to 30 years ago. Music discovery and what songs became familiar were largely dictated by the technology available at the time. That has not changed. So these theories are not, they're only new by the technology, but they're not new by the strategy. And this is something that while it can work best with pop songs, I'm now having the book out now for about 6 months, finding that this is working for probably just about everything except jazz or classical, although I talked to this guy last night and found out that it might actually be working in classical. I'm hearing stories of people at every level saying that these ideas are helping them take up a step and block out from the competition. And the more that we do that, the more that the music industry is going to continue to not only survive, but continue to thrive. The music industry is not in a bad place. Lady Gaga has done $200 million of business in the last 2.5 years. If the music industry was truly bad, things would not be that place. You have the opportunity to make music, and you have the opportunity to make money from the music. You just have to do it smartly. Thank you guys so much, and I'll take some questions now. Anybody want to start? Yes.
Steve McClure from, do I need a mic? Or loud voice enough? Or?
I can hear you.
Yeah? I'll keep my intro short.
How's okay.
That? Okay. Hi, my name is Steve McClure from McClure's Asia Music News. All right, that's under 7 seconds. You say your data, I've got three questions to ask you. Great presentation, by the way. 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, you can only listen to 5% of the music, you know, on a given week. That's for the States?
As far as I can tell, I think it's pretty much focused worldwide. I mean, I'm taking into account the number of, it's a lot of rough math, it's the number of albums that are released in a given week. And then
worldwide.
The number of songs, worldwide, and the number of songs that are on an average album. Is it going to be perfect? No, but it's as far as I can tell, it's approximately 5% based on worldwide albums.
Okay. Really dumb question, but I just want to get this straight in my mind. When you talk about the intro to a song, do you mean the instrumental portion preceding the vocal coming in?
Yes. In most cases, I'm talking about when the vocals are going to come into a song.
Okay.
For example, the train song Hey Soul Sister, which is now a huge worldwide hit. By a traditional means of an intro, the intro itself is probably actually about, I think, 12 or 13 seconds, but they cheat it because he has the intro part where he goes, hey, 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 and the vocals come in. and so the listener, that actually is when the intro stops and the song starts. Yeah. I think about it in the sense of, if I was a DJ on a radio station, which I have been, when would I trample over a song? But yeah. I look at, for example, electronica songs, which generally don't have vocals in a lot of cases, I look to the point of saying, when does the melody line that is important for that particular song start to determine when the intro ends?
Okay. And then subsidiary to that, this is my last question, you know, once the intro has been, you know, once you've got to the main part of the song, given the shift in the technological paradigm, does the chorus tend to come up, if you want to use that term, tend to come up more frequently?
Yes.
Okay, that's corollary to that, yeah?
Sometimes it comes up more frequently, sometimes it comes up earlier. I know that people have employed the idea of moving the chorus up to be the intro of the song, saying, well, hey, if I'm going to try to sell the song, I might as well just throw the intro in the chorus in the beginning to really sell the song right from the get-go. And that does work for some songs, but that's not a necessity. What I have found also is when you do that and you actually put the chorus at the beginning of the song, in essence making the chorus the intro in its own way, then that actually allows you to put one additional chorus, which allows you to have more repetition, which actually does help the song more because you're able to put it in there. The other thing that moving up the intro does is, because some of you, a question that often gets asked is, well, what about sampling on iTunes and the 30-second sample on iTunes? What I've generally found, first off, is that the iTunes sample tends to be about music confirmation. People aren't discovering music through the iTunes sample. They're confirming that that's truly the song they want to buy. They want to make sure they got it right. The iTunes sample starts at about 46, 47 seconds, which in a standard song with a 16, 17 second intro, the chorus generally starts at about the 1 minute mark. Take away the intro, the chorus shifts to about the 46 second mark, which means the chorus starts at the beginning of the iTunes sample. And again, somebody trying to confirm, make sure they got the right song. It's a very helpful technique.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Next question.
On iTunes, does iTunes determine what sample they've put up?
iTunes just automatically picks at about 46, 47 second mark.
Excuse me, yes. Just to comment on that, we are an aggregator and we have open for the choice of the labels to go in and fix that 30-second period.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, and it's been quite a good success.
on iTunes or any service? Because I know some services do that, but... Oh, good. Good. Yes.
I have a question regarding your top 10 downloads. Can I ask you to flip to that page?
Sure.
Doesn't matter really. Yeah, well, here you say that 70% of them are below 7 seconds, or in this case, 8 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's all good. What about top 11 to top 1 million? Is that the same? Because that's good science. That's trying to disprove the theory.
Yes. Well, I haven't had the time to go down to 1 million. So I'll give you that. But in general, I have found that once you're getting through the top 100, that the theory generally holds up. But a lot of that is also, in fairness, because songs that are in the top 10 drift down below the top 10 and tend to stay in the top 100. So for the most part, I found that this holds up through the top 100 most popular songs. Past that, I haven't done the research to know.
All right, but if it also holds up in top 1,000 to 1,010, mm-hmm. then there's no theory.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, there is in the sense of how you look at the long tail. I think most of you, I'm assuming most of you are familiar with the long tail theory. You know, if you're not, it's the idea that there's a lot more commerce past the hits, that you can actually be selling way down the line. And the theory had gone, if you can kind of visualize this, where you kind of have like a hit song selling here, and then it kind of drifts off and then goes like this. The actual graph, though, is that the hit songs are like this, and then it kind of goes to a cliff, and then forms the long tail of minimal selling. Part of the problems of the music business right now is that there's still a lot of songs that sell a lot, and there's still a lot of songs that sell decently on the bottom, but not a lot of songs selling somewhere in the middle. That's kind of the part of the problem of the music business. So to your point, does stuff without this sell? Sure, but it's selling down here at the bottom, because once you get past the hypothetical top 100, the curve goes pretty sharply down in terms of sales. So it would be hard-pressed to call those songs a success. You know, does a song, you know, anybody, you know, you can create a song that has a 75-second intro and somebody somewhere is probably going to buy it, but is that song going to necessarily be successful? That's where it gets difficult.
No, but my point is that if you look at the ones that are not in the top, if also 70% of them have an intro of less than 7 seconds, then that doesn't tell anything. That it doesn't tell that you will have a higher chance of success with that short intro.
Well, I'm not sure I follow you, just because to me the success is measured by the sales chart. So if you look at the top of the chart to be successful, and if something's not in the top of the chart, you deem it unsuccessful. So I don't think it really, to me, I'm not sure how it disproves something if the songs that are not successful don't follow the same.
If they follow exactly the same trend.
Oh, you're saying if they do follow the same trend.
If they do follow, yeah. Then.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, you're right. Then it would. But I would tend to doubt that it doesn't. I mean, just to give you as an example, we'll take the example of the 50 bands that I listen to coming here. We'll just kind of use that as a hypothetical pool. And this is just, you know, random 50 artists. Well, it's not quite random because it was solicited to me. But 13 of the 54 artists had songs, had at least one song with an intro of 7 seconds or less. 13 of the 54 artists had songs, had only songs with intros of 30 seconds or greater. And then the rest of them, which is half, had intros that were in the standard, you know, 10 to 20 second range. So I would venture to guess that if that was to hold up in the broader market, if you go down to the top 100, that you probably are going to get the same. That half of the songs that are down there are probably going to be ones in the typically standard 10 to 20 second range.
Right.
Any other questions?
One more question, then we have to change how.
Yes.
So you've been doing this, you've been presumably publicizing the book for about 6 months, did
yes.
you say? So have you had any opposition to it? Not just us like dismissing theory out of hand, but say people do actually agree with the theory and do take it on board. I mean, say from, I don't know if there's any musicians in the room, but what do musicians think? I mean, obviously some people are very, very sales driven, but there must be, I mean, certainly at a conference like a festival like this,
yeah,
you know, there's people, generally, they would always say, you know, well, sales are nice, but really, I'm doing it for the creative.
Yeah. And I'll say it flat out, and I say it and say it right there up front in the book. If you are doing music specifically for the art of music, do not buy my book. I will be the first one to say I don't want Radiohead to buy my book. Okay, they are doing fine enough on their own. I think they make brilliant music. I don't want them to even know about my theories. Okay. But if you're somebody that wants to actually have commercial success, I feel that I'm able to, you know, provide those extra topics. I get a lot of criticism, you know, talking about the people who do think negatively because they're coming from that artistic side. They're saying that you know, potentially this would trample art. Some people are even saying that this would homogenize music. The problem is that when music was at its most homogenous was when the music labels invested the most money into experimental music. Radiohead came about with OK Computer in 1997 towards the peak of major record companies investing money in interesting new projects. They would have a difficult time being able to make that record today because the record label would not be willing to spend the money on it. So part of this in terms of a cycle of life, so to speak, is that if we actually create more commerce in the music industry and create more commercialized pop songs, for lack of a better term, more money flows into the music industry, into major and large independent labels, and then they have more money to experiment on bands that actually would be doing it for the art. And that's actually a cycle that I can't remember the book that I read it in, but that's actually not just a cycle exclusive to the music industry, that is a cycle that other industries have dealt with before, fashion as an example. So, you know, to me, I'm not expecting everybody to agree with this. I'm expecting some people to find some of the theories relevant for their music and some not. Some people might say that, you know, 7 second intro works for these four songs, but these four songs it's not going to. And that's fine. Everything is going to be each individual experience. But the idea is hopefully to give enough food for thought that you can start thinking about it in terms of how the listener is going to respond so that you can actually make things that will be more profitable and make your artist more popular. I do have copies of the book. I know that this room needs to clear, so I'll be outside. And if anybody does want to purchase a copy of the book, I do have some copies with me. And thank you all for your time today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for your day.